Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I am your host, Tom Hush, joining you again for another beautiful week of NoCo Cinema. And normally this is where I would introduce my beautiful yet disgusting co-host, Connor, but we've decided to take a little, you know, a little break. You know, the therapist said, just be apart for a little bit. So he is doing a retreat up in Wisconsin.
He took Labor Day.
Yeah, he took Labor Day, basically.
Good for him.
Yeah, I like
he
that.
He earned it.
He did. He's a hard worker. And so I decided I need a co-host. So I brought in my buddy Jake Wiseman.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Hello.
He is, you may know him from a few previous episodes of the show. He is a writer. He is a director. He is sometimes an actor under a pseudonym. What's your pseudonym?
In the new one, it's Yves Saint Francis.
Ooh. I like that. It gives me chills.
Yeah.
And he
I had to fill in for somebody. I don't want my name all over the thing, you know?
No, we don't want anybody to know. Except now everybody does know.
Now everybody knows.
If you
it's
listen.
Me, guys. When you see this movie, it's me.
It's him. And he is also the co-founder of Capra Movie House. Jake Wiseman, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for doing
it's
this.
It's great to be here. I love this seat.
It's, you know, they're very ergonomic.
Well, I mean the more, like, royal seat.
Oh,
I like sitting next to you, Tom.
The royal seat, a version of the royal we.
Yeah, like not the
literal seat,
not
but the
literal
royal
seat.
It's
a nice seat. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a wonderful seat.
So more the idea of the seat.
Yeah, I mean,
more
I miss
than the
Connor and everything
seat.
Like that. But this is a lot of fun.
This
he needs to
fun.
Take a sleep.
Yeah. He needs to. Joining us for our feature presentation segment, we've got a couple of writers, producers. They've been making some shorts, making some full-length features.
Unbelievably exciting.
It's so great to have them. We've got Joe Randazzo and Sean Steffen. Thank you so much for
coming
on the show.
Welcome, guys.
Hello. Thank you for having.
Thanks for having us.
Now, we did have a little moment of asking about this, Joe. Can you please say your name the way your family says it, because I really like it.
Oh, Randazzo.
Oh,
it's beautiful.
My family is straight. Well, my parents were straight from Italy, so
wow.
English is actually my second language.
Wow, so
I love Italiano. I'm not as practiced anymore.
That's all right.
But yeah, I was speaking Italian long before I learned to speak English.
Is that how you got dates?
Yes, that's how you do it.
Beautiful.
You just
Sean, any Italian over there?
No, unfortunately, no. I barely even speak Pig Latin.
That's too bad, you know, because whenever we have Connor on the show, he's very fluent in Spanish, so occasionally we'll get him to speak in another language,
it's
gorgeous.
It's the language of romance.
True. You guys made a short called The Perfect Candidate. It's up on funnierdie.com, mm-hmm. where everybody can watch it, and I would definitely suggest that you watch it. When was that one made again?
We released it in November of 2012.
About 5 days before the election, I want to say.
I think we released it on election day. It was close to it.
Right. And this short is, I guess, a beautifully funny but also horrifyingly accurate prediction of 2016.
You just got it a couple of years early.
Yeah.
We are so sorry.
Oh,
if we put that out there in the universe, we apologize. And I don't think any amount
idea.
Of apologizing is any going to get ever going to. You know,
make up
purge
for that.
My soul here.
No.
So, can you give us a little overview? What is the perfect candidate?
Around late 2011, when Charlie Sheen was going through his massive meltdown after being fired from massively entertaining too, which is what I started thinking. How funny would it be if somebody ran for president on that idea of just saying whatever the hell he wants? Damn what anybody thinks, and just kind of a celebrity with no self-awareness whatsoever running for president. And we had just finished Deadly Xmas, or we were still working in post on Deadly Xmas, and we had had this subplot with Joe Estevez, who's Charlie Sheen's uncle. And we never got it worked in. So we thought, why don't we just do a short with him and we'll just include it on the DVD. And so I came up with the idea, and I took it to Dave Campfield, and we worked on it a little. At that point, I was living in New York. I moved out to L.A. He set up a meeting for me with Joe and told him the idea. He had a few things he wanted to, you know, he wanted to work on with it. Like he liked the idea, excuse me, of a low-level celebrity kind of being in the running to be president or trying to, and he played himself as a complete boob, and he's nothing like that. And his whole thing was, why doesn't he just, he should just be somebody who just says whatever's on his mind. And he doesn't have a filter because he's not a politician. He doesn't know that this isn't proper.
He's not part of the Washington elite.
Yeah.
Drain the swamp.
Not an insider.
Mega.
So you basically, you guys, you took this story and, this is Donald Trump.
Like, it basically
I'm
is.
I'm not afraid to say. You have Joe Esteves playing Donald Trump in the way that we all kind of view him right now, which is just this big loudmouth who says whatever he wants, you know, throws common decency out the window and becomes president. Like, how, when you made that and you can't, when, you know, 4 years later, when we were watching the 2016 election and it actually more or less happens how you made it, what was the feeling there?
We actually didn't notice until we actually screened it for John Davies. Mm-hmm. And sure. We had an audience that was, at the end, really engaged. Mm-hmm. And when we took the stage that day, they were asking us a lot of questions about, oh, my God, did you get... Because, I mean, you even had everything down to the almost... his name escapes me right now. Steve Bannon.
Oh, the Steve Bannon.
We almost had the Steve Bannon-type character.
Yeah, who's kind of, Steve Bannon stooge.
It's, oh, I mean... It was, we didn't really notice it until a couple days before or after the inauguration when we screened it in Chicago and everyone was like, oh my God, you got this right and this right.
You had this character, you had this character, this person's in the administration, this person was part of the campaign, and it just kind of, it hit us. And it slowly but surely, it came over us.
Yeah, they were comparing Roberta to Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah, we had our own Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon in it. And it's all the way down to the very last joke where we just substituted Donald Trump by name and declared him the winner.
Well, because we had this... Because ultimately, Joe Esteves is a good guy, and he sees where it's going, and he's like, no, I can't do this. So there's a little post-credit thing where you just have the news announcer. The whole thing, he's having this dilemma of, oh, well, I can't do this, so we need somebody who's a total media whore and would do it just to have the power. And, of course, the last line of the whole thing is the winner of California and the presidency of the United States is Donald J. Trump. And I'm like... Now, looking back at that...
Was that in the original script, or did you guys have that in post?
We originally... The idea was Lloyd Kaufman, who we're both friends with, and we thought that maybe we could use him in just a photo or whatnot. And then we thought, you know what? As much as we love Lloyd, maybe that wouldn't be the best punchline for the joke.
Sure.
On a major level. So then we just thought, well, Donald Trump. That works perfectly. He had just been roasted at the time on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
He was roasted by the president at the the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So it was one of those things where it just felt right. And who in their right mind would think that Donald Trump had a chance to win?
Just what I was about to say. We looked at it as no. Donald Trump has as much a chance as being president as Lloyd Kaufman does.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, isn't that like what we're talking about when it's you know, life imitating art, like,
imitating life apparently.
Art is, oh, that tickles geez. The hell
full
out
circle.
Of me.
Full circle,
unbelievable. So you both worked on the story for this, correct?
Yes.
Joe, was it your original idea, and then Sean, you came in, doctored the script a little bit.
I punched up and kind of came up with the idea for Robert Zadar, the late great Robert Zadar, as the running mate. And
he's a joy in the short.
He truly is, and he was having so much fun. I wasn't on set. It was actually filmed in Joe's apartment in the course of one day, and we just kind of shuffled around everything.
Yeah. Cool. Actually, yeah, when he's done telling the story, we had to change the script the day before because we lost all the locations. But yeah, go ahead and tell him how you came on to the project, because I love the story.
We needed an idea for a running mate, and we were just throwing out names, and I'm a giant Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of just looking over at my movie shelf, all of them were facing inward except one box set, and it was four Mystery Science Theater titles, and one was Soul Taker.
And I just said, I'm like, got to go with Robert Zadar. Can't go wrong with Robert Zadar. They're perfect together. This would be great.
And when I called Joe Estevez, he's like, yeah, we're still great friends.
One of his best friends. Soul Taker was their favorite experience together. And yeah, it was easy going from there. But yeah, I mainly kind of came in and helped punch up some of the punchlines, some of the political jokes, and some of the references to just their past career.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. What was it like working with these two guys? I mean, they're celebrities in a certain sense. I mean, you know, Estevez is a big name, but you know, not many people know who Joe Estevez is. What was it like working with them? Was it were they humble? Were they, you know, just really about the craft?
They were very humble. I mean, any time that I wanted something in there that Joe didn't like, he definitely let me know it. He was totally open to working with me on anything, and we were great working together, and we both really love the finished product, which I find is something not usual with him. But he called me and he goes, I see it went up today. I like it. Because it's really good. You guys did a great job, and I normally don't like a lot of these movies that they cast me in, but this was really good. And I felt like we were kind of paying tribute to his career in a way, because, you know, like I was a Mystery Science Theater fan growing up. I liked a lot of the movies he did, and we were kind of reverent towards them, you know. Yeah. And maybe he doesn't, I don't know if he gets that a lot, but mm-hmm. we were like, no, dude, we love you. We grew up on your stuff.
There was definitely a respect factor in writing the jokes. And I kind of looked at it as, because there were some lines that we put in that did cross the line initially because we didn't know. And then we came to the conclusion, it's okay to be the butt of the joke. Don't make him the ass of the joke.
Right.
There is a big difference.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And it's true. He has reached the point in his career where he can kind of parody himself if he knows it's out of a place of love and respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. definitely he felt that.
And I mean, I mentioned self-awareness. It's the character has no self-awareness whatsoever. Joe is very aware of his place in film and in the history of film. So he was totally cool with it. He got it, you know. And there were some points where we wrote in, you know, titles that we were making fun of, and he's like, not that guy, because I still have a good relationship with him and I don't mm-hmm. want to sour it. Mm. Use this one. I don't care for that.
Yeah. Screw that guy.
Fuck that.
So I want to get into
the bleep button there.
Oh, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Fuck.
Oh, when you, no.
Yeah,
the,
so
the gates are open.
The gates are open. So I want to go back a little bit and sure. talk about both your experience becoming film lovers, because, you know, most people get into the business because they love films and they see films and they're just like, I want to make that, and I think I can make that a reality. So when was the first time you saw a movie and said, I can do that?
Do you want to do it first, and then I'll go?
Yeah, I think I can do it first. When I was a kid, growing up, my family is from New Jersey, so mm-hmm. I would constantly go out to New Jersey and visit my aunt, my uncle, and I was staying over at their place, and I got up early in the morning, just kind of going through their movie collection, and they had all the movies that I was not allowed to watch when I was back at home, all the R-rated goodness of Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith and Robert Rodriguez and all kind of like the indie showcase of the early 90s, and watching those films, especially Kevin Smith films, you kind of realize, wait a minute, this guy, he's talking like me. Mm-hmm. It's just arguments about Star Wars on the playground that I'm having with my friends. He looks like he's not really. He's just setting down a camera. He's not really doing much. And technically, he got better. But at that point in his career, it was just set a camera down. Two people walking in, tell some dick jokes. Two people walk out, go to the next thing. And I'm like, okay, I could do this. It seems fun. But then, as you get older, you start going to movies more and more, and just that the conversations that you have leaving the theater, sitting outside of the theater, having a cigarette and dissecting what you just saw, or going over to the diner and having a cup of coffee and talking about that and more, and just as the conversations got more and more passionate and so on and so on. By the time I had graduated high school, I said, you know what? Columbia is downtown, and I live in Chicago. Columbia is downtown. Why not? I give this a shot and get into this and see if I can really do this. So that was kind of the genesis for me was watching the indie showcase, so to speak, of the early 90s. So.
And it seems like, especially with a lot of filmmakers, I would say this generation of filmmakers maybe, I mean, Tarantino is a massive figure, Kevin Smith, massive figure, and Robert Rodriguez still kind of has that indie spirit. Like, he's giving out money right now. He's just like, send me your short, and I'll give you, you know, $15,000 to continue with it, see where it goes. And I know, Jake, you're a big Kevin Smith guy.
Sure.
Yeah. And, would you agree with that? That Kevin Smith is kind of one of those on the Mount Rushmore of this generation of filmmakers?
I don't know. I went to Columbia, too, so I don't know if you had the same experience where, like, in high school, I was, like, the dude who knew who Lloyd Kaufman was.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I
had my autographed copy of Terror Firmer.
Exactly.
So I knew all
too
well.
Terror Firmer is my favorite one. I can talk about that for hours. I can talk about Terror. We can do an entire podcast on Terror Firmer and maybe the three of us would want to listen to it. But, but then you get to college and everybody's heard of all of these people. So there is kind of this school of filmmakers from that time when we were all a certain age watching Darren Aronofsky and Spike Jonze and all of the other just tons of people, which then when you realize everybody else likes those people, that's when I found, well, I liked Todd Solondz before that, but you know, like you find those little, the Hal Hartleys and the whoever, go back, the Fellinis, and you find your German New Wave and you find your Italian neo such.
And then you transcend your physical form.
Yeah, your Herzogs and your Wim Wenders and all of that stuff. And then, you know, and then we all grow together.
Yeah, exactly. That collective film education that we all seem to be giving ourselves as fans.
And it always continues, Like I was going to say, for me, it was staying up late one night. I was growing up in New York, and the original House on Haunted Hill came on, and it was fun. I mean, I'd never watched a black and white movie at that point. I was like maybe 12 or 13, and I really dug it. And I kind of thought of the idea of legacy. You know, like here's William Castle, who's at that point had already passed away. Vincent Price had already passed away. And yet here they are, and they get to speak to us again, and they get to continue to do that. And it's something that, it transcends physical form. Mm-hmm. And if you do something that resonates, you can keep going beyond your lifespan. And I think that's what made me want to do it, is you just kind of have some part of you, your opinions, your thoughts, your consciousness kind of lives on through them, you know?
Wow,
that's my way of
artistic immortality, if you will.
I got
in a way,
goosebumpy when you were talking.
Yeah.
I'm totally with that.
That's what I was going for. Let's do that. I mean, unfortunately, you don't always end up being able to make a giant movie. So, we have a couple $1,000. We know a couple of actors who are sort of well known. We can all have fun.
Make an eerily prescient short comedy. I need the
history books to know that this happened. Like, I'm dead scared. When I was watching it, and I'm just like, oh my God, this came out in 2012. And as you said, as audiences, so aptly pointed out, you hit like pretty much every major bullet point, which
unintentionally.
Unintentional. And isn't that just the way?
And that last line, I remember, like, you watch the short and you're like, this is good, this is great, I'm laughing, this is great. And then the last line, you're just like, wait, what?
Shit.
Come again? When did they just pop this? Like, do you pop this shit in?
That
did you just
was not pop this a last minute edit, I swear.
Well, no, I mean, it says it's uploaded in 2012, so what you gonna do? Yeah. You can't do that.
I mean, even when we were showing it at film festivals in, like, 2012, 2013, we were always getting a strong reaction, and the audience was always engaged. I mean, usually we'd have either Joe Estevez or Robert Zadar with us. So I think maybe there was that little bit of extra, we're gonna get to talk to these guys. Mm-hmm. But we always had a good reaction to it. But it's just in light of everything that's happened,
especially in the last, say, I'd say 8 to 9 months, any time that it was watched or any time somebody clicked on it or mentioned it, that was first and in the forefront.
Is it still getting a good reaction online? I know it's on Funny or Die. Like, as far as I know, on that meter that they have, it's still deeply funny. Like,
yeah, I mean, but I haven't checked like how many views it has. I don't think it has that many. Like, I don't think a lot of people know about it except for the people who have actually seen it, or maybe our friends or people who shared it.
It never made the jump to YouTube?
Never.
We are on YouTube, too. Yeah,
okay, that's good.
We uploaded it there.
Great.
I mean, Joe Esteves still talks about it in interviews. He actually just found something two, three days ago where Joe said, it's a really funny thing I did, and I really enjoy it, and, telling people to check it out. I think it was, like, in Backstage or Backpage or something.
Backstage, yes.
So, I mean, he still mentions it. I don't know if anybody's really seeking it out. Maybe you guys will be able to help with that, because, WGN's going to give us a little extra listener base or a viewer base that we didn't have before, but...
Yeah, I wanted to ask, because you've got multiple works on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And I was rewatching one of your Caesar and Otto films on Amazon Prime. And how do you guys feel about that as a distribution platform, as smaller filmmakers? Like, is this a good thing where people can get stuff out? Or is it a sense of if anybody can do it, does it still have that value?
See, that's the thing. I'm kind of torn.
You're still
on
that. Playing with it.
Because on the one hand, an avenue like Amazon Prime is going to make it so that, you're going through seeing what's on there. You might be like, oh, Linnea Quigley and Felissa Rose and Joe Esteves are in this. Yeah, I'll check it out. But at the same time, the market is so flooded now that what are the odds that you're going to come across it? You know?
I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or any of these million streaming services that we have to have in order to watch something. it's the deluge of content that it paralyzes you. I feel paralyzed sometimes that when you're trying to search through it.
You spend more time looking.
Exactly. You spend most of your time sitting there on your streaming stick just like, maybe. And then you end up watching, season 5 of Friends again for the, millionth time. And but I did love it so much that, when we were talking before the show, when we were setting this up, that you were able to just say, oh, just go to Amazon Prime and just watch it. Yeah. Like, you don't have to send me a screener. A lot of people use Vimeo because you get the lock, you can put like a passcode on it and stuff. But even then, it's like the sense of simplicity is so great, at the very least.
Sent it to me, who then watched it.
Boom.
There you go. So there
super
you go.
Easy. I want to talk about the Caesar and Otto films.
Sure.
Especially Caesar and Otto's Deadly Christmas.
Which I think is the best one of the series.
I have to agree. So where did the idea for these come from? Was it just like, let's do a horror comedy sort of deal? Or when did you decide that this is what I want to try?
The Caesar and Otto films are actually the brainchild of Dave Canfield, the director. He came up with the characters. They were characters that he and his best friend, Paul Komicki, they did stuff in high school and, locally in Long Island with them. And they had already made two films before I met them. Mm-hmm. I met him at a film festival in Ohio in 2007, I want to say. And he invited me, both New York boys, he invited me up to Long Island to watch Caesar and Otto's Summer Camp Massacre. My girlfriend and I went up and we loved it.
Yeah.
And he contacted me and he's like, well, I'm going to be doing another one if you're interested in coming on board. And at that point, I was trying to, I'd won a couple of awards for like unproduced screenplays. And he's like, well, I'm making this film. So if you jump on and you help write some of it, that'll give you a writing credit on something that's completed. And we just kind of over the next 2008 or 2009 is when I got the first draft of it. And we just started working. And then, as money came, we just do more stuff. And the beauty of him and his best friend being the two leads is you don't have to worry about them going anywhere.
Yeah.
So the stories are centralized around them. And then it's like, well, we can get Linnea. We can get Felissa Rose. We can get Robert Zadar. We can get Joe Esteves. And we just kind of sprinkle
piece
them
it
in.
Together. Yeah.
But that was – he's – for the type of movie that they are, which is just a goofy screwball horror comedy, he puts a lot into the plots of those.
Yeah,
there's a lot of twists and turns.
Uh-huh. And you can really get the sense of love from it.
Yes.
Just like, one, I wanted to say, for being a movie where it's like, shoestring budget, mm-hmm. it looks great. It's got a great look to it. Like, it looks professionally done and
that
shot.
That is entirely a credit to Dave, who's...
Yeah.
Dave is an amazing editor,
mm-hmm.
and he took, I think, like 2 years maybe to edit this because he was very meticulous.
Yeah, there's some serious, just for a frame of reference, I felt a lot of Edgar Wright, the kind of like shoo, 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 quick cuts for visual comedy. There was a lot of fun visual comedy going on.
He will love that comparison when he hears this
yeah.
interview. I think he will love that comparison.
Hey, man, good job.
He's someone else I'm going to get you in touch with. All his stuff, he's so good. He's just such a good filmmaker. It's just he's never had that break where he's had like a real budget to work with.
Sure.
And that was one of the things that I noticed when I went up to see his film in Long Island is I'm like, wait, you mean this for how much?
Like,
that's like catering on that's yeah. like one day catering on a bigger movie. So he's able to do this, and he's able to put. I mean, he directed and edited Perfect Candidate too,
mm-hmm.
and he co-wrote it with me. And he's a really talented writer. He's a really talented director. But overall, I think his editing above anything else
that's
makes
real.
They make our films look so good,
mm-hmm.
you know, for films that are made with absolutely no real money to speak of. He worked a bunch of doubles at a restaurant so we could pay Robert Zadar.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's how this money's made. It's
yeah.
not like we're uh-huh. we're like, oh yeah, let me just go get this investor to pop in 20 grand, you
yeah.
know. I think our total budgets are like 3 to 5, you know,
yeah,
3 to 5,000 a time. So
yeah, what's it like working on that kind of budget?
You find yourself wearing a lot of hats.
Mm-hmm.
Like Summer Ferguson, who's in she's not in Paranormal Halloween, but she's the casting agent at the beginning of Perfect Candidate, and mm-hmm. she's the love interest for Otto in Deadly Xmas. She does so much besides just act. She's our script supervisor. She's basically our PA. She's basically our AD. And it's a very tight-knit crew because we can't really afford to pay anybody. So it's those of us who have, like, an emotional stake in it kind of doing everything. And then you get a guy like Rich Calderon who's... He did all the special effects. He dresses all the sets. He does a lot of professional stuff for like the Hallmark Channel and stuff like that. And there was a joke about him being called like Father Christmas or something, because anytime you see like one of those Christmas movies on the Hallmark Channel,
that's him.
He's the guy who dressed all the sets and did everything and got all the props. And
he's the one giving Leanne Rimes a little Santa hat.
And he comes in and he works with us and he loves this stuff so much. And we love him because he does such amazing work. It's really just, it's a lot of people who are emotionally invested in the product and believe in it. And because of that, we put everything we have in it because mm-hmm. we want to see it succeed.
Absolutely. Do you think people realize the level of effort that goes into any filmmaking?
No,
yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all. Everybody wants to make a movie until they realize that it's actually work.
Yeah.
As soon as it's like, hey, like I'll send people a script and it'll be like 20 pages of something. And months go by and they haven't read it. I'm like, well, if you can't read 20 pages,
yeah.
what makes you think you're going to be able to do this?
Yeah. And Sean, even mentioning you work in doubles, man.
You got to do everything it takes. 18-hour shifts, 16 to 18-hour shifts, just at a chicken wing joint, doing whatever I can just to earn money to get Robert Zadar into our picture.
Yeah. Wow.
Got to do whatever you can.
And those guys took great pay cuts to work with us, by the way. Because they saw the script, like, we see it. There's no money here, but what you guys are doing is really cool. And that seems to be everybody. You know, Felissa Rose, I've never met her personally, mm-hmm. But she has championed these films all over the place. Linnea Quigley, I just saw something a couple weeks ago. She commented on something somebody posted about Deadly Xmas about how much she loves this movie. I'm like, still, 5 years later, 5 years after the release, you're still talking about it and you're still telling people you love it.
That's great.
So, I mean, they're really cool because I think once they see something that they think these guys are trying a little bit harder, they're trying to be a cut above everybody else, I think they gravitate towards that, especially at the stage of their career they're at, where they're, you know, their glory days were, you know, 20, yeah. 30 years ago. You know, they they appreciate the fans that grew up and are now doing everything with them.
Especially at the lower budget, you have to be even, you have to show up with more professionalism than ever, because everything has to be on time. Everything, that was the one thing that you said when you were picking up Joe and you were picking up Bobby, even though I think a car broke down or something, you were doing whatever you can just to act the most professional that you can, because every little bit helps. You never know who's going to talk to who, you never know who's going to work with who, and these guys, low budget, they can get it done quick, get it done in a day, they're very, you know, that sort of thing can get you a huge, huge start.
And Joe Estevez has gotten me jobs because
many
of it.
Numerous gigs.
He's loved it. But actually, yeah, the day we met Robert Zadar, it was just after he was having his treatments for cancer, and this was the first project he worked on. He flew into LAX. Now, this is how tight the budget was. We couldn't afford to put him up in a motel, so I had to use my Hyatt Rewards points to put him up in a high-end hotel because I'm like, we have no money. So I had all these points saved up, and we're like, all right, yeah, let's put
no
him
wonder
in.
Bobby
the
loved us.
Yeah, Bobby loved us.
Oh my gosh.
So we had to fly him in from Iowa, and the Paul Kilmicki, who plays Otto in all these movies, he and I went to LAX to pick him up, and I'm standing with Robert as Paul goes to get the car and come around. Bobby's in a wheelchair at that point. And Paul comes around, and the car is smoking, and and Bobby just starts laughing, and I'm like, oh, great, he's going to think we're this horrible fly-by-night operation, so now I have no money as it is, so I have to hail a cab and take him to the hotel in Beverly Hills, and it's costing me $80. I'm like, what can I do?
This is my catering budget for the day.
Yeah. I ended up I'm waiting in Beverly Hills for somebody else to come and get me and take me back to the set, and I ended up missing that day because we were shooting the next day. Mm-hmm. We were doing pickups on Deadly Xmas, then we were shooting Perfect Candidate the next day.
Jeez. How do you keep that schedule? Like,
Dave is insane. Dave was living in New York. He flew out. He was crashing on my couch for a week. And actually, the studio we were going to shoot Perfect Candidate in double booked itself. And we were the lower budget production that they were taking a little, we were getting a little less money from you guys. So we're going to take the big boys who are paying us more. So all of a sudden, it's 2 days before we're shooting. Dave's got to do pickups for Deadly Xmas the next day. And it's like, we just lost all our locations and Robert Zadar just flew in.
And that record scratch.
This
is my life.
So I think I was calling you, panicking, and Dave and Sean and I are all on the phone together going, okay, if we move this scene here. So we just ended up dressing my apartment like for 8 different setups that day.
Oh, wow. But isn't that just the beauty of like the indie filmmaking? Is that you do the best with
the
what you have?
The manic desperation of indie filmmaking.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially when you're working with no money. It's not like, you know, we're Warner Brothers and we're just like, we can't work at Studio 3 today. Well, is there any open studio today? We'll move things. I mean, I know it's not that easy. I've worked on the Warner lot. I know they have their stuff set up for weeks and months. But it's... It's the beauty of it. It's the fun of it.
I wanted to ask, here in Chicago, when did you come to Chicago?
2012.
And what have you thought about the film community here?
I haven't done a lot out here, actually. I've done a TV show in Kenosha called Dedger's Dark Coffin Classics. It's a horror host. And his dead girls, and they showed a couple of my films, and a couple of times they've had me back on just to do whatever whatever they need. And
you should check out Svengoolie.
I love Svengoolie. I was a big fan of horror hosts growing up because I think Elvira was kind of my awakening.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, horror, right? The horror awakening.
Yeah, that one. although it was in a way because seeing her, there was the old VHS tapes, the big box VHS tapes would have Elvira on it, and then next to it would be like the movie poster. Mm-hmm. And horror movie posters from the 60s, 70s, and 80s are so beautifully painted. Oh. And there was a movie called The Monster Club. It's just all these monster faces, Vincent Price and John Carradine in front of it. And then there's this really sexy goth looking woman. And it's like, I want to watch that one. What is that? You know, and you take it home and, you know. So I really had, I always had a fondness and appreciation for horror hosts. So I actually saw Svengoolie stuff before I even came out here.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, he's a legend.
He's a legend out
here. He's a total legend.
And I love how it was all regional. Like every area has their own Svengoolie or Goulardi or Zachary.
Isn't Goulardi like Paul Thomas Anderson's dad?
I think something
like that.
Can I get a fact check on
that? His name is Ernie Anderson. He might be his dad.
Okay.
I know he was like the weatherman or something in Cleveland. And
oh, really?
They just asked him to do this horror host gig. And I got a lot of friends in Cleveland that might be able to either confirm or deny that. But he might be. His name is Ernie Anderson.
Yeah, Goulardi. Yep. He was the father of director Paul Thomas Anderson.
That is good, man.
That's the only reason why I would know that name.
That is good.
Thank you. I'm so glad I didn't fuck that up. That would have been really embarrassing.
The other one that's kind of legacy is Lori Cardiel, who was the lead in George Romero's Day of the Dead. Her mm-hmm. father was Chili Billy in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Another host.
That's so crazy.
Dude, Chili Billy.
Well, we were just talking about Ed Wood and Vampyra and all that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Why do you think horror has that kind of... community reach? Because when you meet people who, I mean, everybody kind of watches action. Sure, you watch action movies. Comedy people are comedy people. But I feel like when you meet someone who is really well-versed in horror in all its varieties, there's a real strong, I don't know, community there, a real strong bond when you meet someone else. It's like, oh, you know Joe Esteves from this, you know, even between what we just had
here.
We
can be friends now.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I've walked in, I see someone wearing a Day of the Dead shirt with Bub on it. I'm just like, hey, like, we can talk. Why do you think that is?
It's interesting because even if you go back and you look at the great horror writers, like if you look at Bram Stoker and Edgar Allan Poe and... there was always this kind of isolation. With Stoker, it was health reasons. With Poe, I think it might have been mental illness. I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it's that the genre attracts people who maybe are more lonely and isolated, or if it kind of breeds that a little. But I find that a lot of the people that I know that are into horror movies or into horror literature are people who were, bullied a lot as kids, or they were, you know, the social outcast. I certainly was. Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a release, an anger release involved with in the community and whatnot. There is a sense of loneliness. I agree with that.
There's the anger. There's the part of you that is like, why are they treating me like this? You know, and the idea of being different. And it, you know, even if you look at Frankenstein, mm-hmm. you know, you see this poor creature who's just a victim of circumstance, and everyone around him just doesn't get him, and because of that. You know, you get the pitchfork carrying mobs, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it. I think a huge part of it is there's a sense of community, because maybe you understand what I went through. And maybe that's why you're watching these movies.
Who knows?
I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. I mean, I can only speak from experience, and I can only speak from, you know, the stuff that I've read about, you know, James Whale and Bram Stoker and Edgar Allan Poe and all these people who, there was always this kind of loneliness. Mm-hmm. I mean, James Whale, as you know, a homosexual man in 1930s Hollywood. who are you turning to?
Yeah,
you know. So
it's a good place for people who are lost or like need. They, you're right. It's the release. I really like that. The release and the ability to just like throw yourself into something dark and, you know, find.
You're going to cover yourself up because if you're the person that's getting picked on a lot, you don't want to blend in anymore. You want to just kind of disappear into the background. Mm-hmm. And I think we can sniff each other out in a way.
Yeah.
Because I think you could, you know, there's something that you'll say in conversation or you'll say in conversation. It triggers something, and suddenly it's like we've known each other for years, because now And you and I, we share the same experience.
It's a brotherhood. It's a sorority. It's a fraternity as far as cinema. It absolutely is. I don't know. Personally, I think you probably broke it down a lot more on the psychological aspect. But for me, I think it's also kind of your love of cinema, your love of creation. There's so much creativity that goes into making a horror movie. I remember when Francis Ford Coppola did Bram Stoker's Dracula, he gave an interview and he said, "I feel so happy I get to do a horror movie because I can do whatever the heck I want. Bleeding fountains, all that. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't matter. It's artistic. It's beautiful." And he was right, because there's a lot. I went back and watched that.
Awesome stuff, like, in that movie.
Great stuff, but there's some stuff that's completely off the wall. And you could tell there was a lot of freedom involved with that. And so I think that there is a sense of, you know, the release, the freedom, the ability to create, the makeup, the madness, in a way. I think it's very freeing.
And art in general is something that you kind of need to be a little isolated for, you know, for it to work, you know, because you got to – it's weird because you have to be isolated in order to be able to speak to masses. It's weird. And actually, there was a friend of mine who interviewed Chris Barnes several years ago from us, the metal band 6 Feet Under, and he gave her this quote. "So art is really messed up people who are really lonely and sad, though I don't know that they have a reason to be."
Interesting. Huh. Interesting.
Well, I also noticed, just wanted to get your guys' input on this. Yeah. My favorite thing about horror audiences that I've noticed is that they're always rooting for the film, more so than other genre. I guess everyone wants a comedy to make you laugh, but it's more like, make me laugh, comedy. Mm. Like, yeah, you have one job, make me fucking laugh. Yeah. Whereas a horror film, everybody wants it to be scary and wants the best for the film and is really gives a lot of leeway to a lot of films. Like, I know people...
Oh, definitely.
I don't know. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on that.
I think in a way it does, because it's again, it's the community thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and especially now with social media that, you know, I just got him in touch with John Dugan from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Cool.
You know, we're able to...
Star power.
we're able to now actually have an interaction with our idol. So we sort of feel that kinship. Like, Kevin Tenney and I became really great friends over the last couple of years. And we, you know, every time I'm in L.A., we meet up, we have lunch, we have dinner, whatever. He invited me to Thanksgiving a couple of years ago.
Cool.
So I think there's that... you kind of feel like you have a personal connection. I think, again, it's because of the content. I think also we're used to films not being taken seriously by critics.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And also we can forgive when a movie isn't that bad, because we kind of we tend to understand that, yeah, the studio didn't really want this.
Okay.
You know, they didn't really. So
that's fascinating.
It's the underdog
that's a
thing.
Great perspective on
it's
it.
It's the underdog thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
So what's coming up next for you guys? Where's the next feature? Where's the next short? What are you thinking?
I've been trying to get a project called Ripper off the ground for several years. Mm-hmm. Justin Martel, who's actually the producer on the next and unfortunately posthumous George Romero Dead film.
Mm-hmm.
He is on board to produce it with me. The problem, of course, as always, has been money. I've been trying to get that off the ground. The script has won a ton of awards. I wrote a short with a friend in Michigan called Threshold. It's a 30-ish page horror short that it's all set in one location. We're just trying to figure out the logistics to get that done. But that won last year at the Erie Horror Film Festival. The script did, and we're just kind of getting around, trying to see what we can do.
And you've got a couple of showings coming up in Ohio, right?
Yes, Wild Eye Releasing, who put out the Cesar and Otto films, and actually there's a box set of the three features coming out in. I remember it was supposed to come out last month, but it got delayed because of manufacturing issues. But that's available as the it's available on Amazon.com if you search Cesar and Otto. But Wild Eye Releasing is doing a 24-hour marathon in Columbus, Ohio, at the Gateway Film Center. And we are among the films that are showing are Cesar Renato's Deadly Xmas and The Perfect Candidate. I don't think Paranormal Halloween is, and I don't know if Summer Camp Massacre is, but the others, the other two certainly are. And they're also showing our video tribute to Robert Zadar, which Sean was a big part of.
Yes.
But yeah, that's coming up. It's through. This is going to be one of those edit points.
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't worry about that.
I turned my phone off. Okay, so it's going to be at the Gateway Film Center, and it's through a local horror host out there, actually, that's putting it together along with Wild Eye Releasing. Yeah, that's taking place on the 16th.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, it's the best way to watch movies is to go out and just see them.
Yeah, it's a convenient thing, man.
Especially, we talked about the convenience of being able to watch it on Amazon, but there's something magical about being able to get together with a group of people, sit down, and just watch something together.
Or watch it on TV even at the same time. I think that's one of the things that streaming's kind of ruining, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is the idea of, you know, talking to you the next day and going, hey, did you see that horror movie that was on, you know, whatever channel last night?
Well, there's no real destination or must-see TV anymore.
Not anymore, no.
Well, I mean, there's Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, which everyone associates with, but even then, if you have a DVR or if you don't have an AMC subscription, oh, it's okay, I'll wait till Netflix.
Yeah.
I'll wait till the HBO free weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't watched the new Rick and Morty yet.
I haven't either.
I will probably today, but
highly suggest it. Definitely watch it.
So thank you so much, Joe, Sean. It's been fantastic. Definitely, if you want to see more of their stuff, you've got all three Cesar Renato films are on Amazon. There's a box set up there if you want to purchase it. You can catch The Perfect Candidate on funnierdie.com.
Or on YouTube or on IMDb.
On IMDb. Right. Wait, so they're actually, you can watch it on IMDb?
Yeah.
Look at this. The internet.
Right there for you.
The internet.
The internet.
Internet.
The internet.
So definitely check out their stuff. Where can we find you on social media?
I'm trying to remember what the URL is for my Facebook account. I don't remember.
You know what? Look for Joe Randazzo. No, not the one from The Onion. That's a different guy.
That is a different guy. Who IMDb gets confused with me, and people tweet to me often thinking I'm him, and yeah.
Not the same man. Not the same man.
Both around the same age, both originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Wouldn't you know? Ain't so that just the way?
Wow.
Ain't that just the way?
So there's a lot of, and both writers.
Yeah, both. What? Jesus Christ.
I think he's much funnier than I am, though.
Oh. Well, you know what?
But not as humble.
Not as humble. I believe it was.
That I don't know.
I believe it was Kendrick Lamar who said, sit down. Be humble. So
I think that's true.
I think that's true. We can quote him on. Sean, how about yourself? Where can we follow you and your work?
You can follow me right now. I'm on Twitter at Sean Effen Steffen, SEANFNSTEFFEN. I'm also on Twitch a lot playing Friday the 13th. So if you ever want to jump in and play, I'll be on.
Very fun.
Cool.
All right.
What's your username on that?
Is it the same thing? Sean Effen Steffen.
Yeah, I'm not a big gamer guy.
Steffen.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. Sean Steffen and Joe Randazzo. Before we get out of here. Say your last name one more time.
Just say the very Italian way.
Say it the correct way.
Well, I'll even give you my full name then, because it's not Joe.
Please. Yes.
My given name was Giuseppe Randazzo.
Oh.
Le mie genitori parlavano italiano prima che parlavano inglese. Anche io parlava solamente italiano.
Paisan.
He's my roommate. He does this at home 24/7.
Oh, yeah. That's what I do.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. We will talk to you soon. You're listening to No Coast Cinema here on WGN+. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world.